Everybody that's dependent on the US dollar right now is going to get financially annihilated because your purchasing power is going to drop drastically.
Once you build your Bitcoin treasury, you take it into self-custody, you're running a node, you're a financially sovereign individual. If you want to go speculate, if you have a retirement account, knock yourself out, have fun, because they had a memory of what the gold standard was like. And so they're not wrong, but they're wrong today. They have the right idea, but the wrong solution.
I have bad news for these people. At some point, this is going to blow up in your face, and no one is going to be upset that it blew up in your face. Because you asked for it.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. As always, I have Tony with me and we've got special guest Greer Hall. Greer, thanks for joining, man. Let's jump right into the news. So up first, we have this tweet from Donald J. Trump: for all cost-cutting Republicans, of which I am one, remember, you still have to get reelected. Don't go too crazy. We'll make it all up times 10 with growth more than ever before. And Lynn Alden says basically what he's saying is that nothing stops this train. So the government will continue spending. Doge was an abysmal failure. Greer, what's your, why don't you give your like sort of state of the union? What are you seeing? What's your analysis? Do you agree with Lynn on this?
Yeah, I think if you're going to, you know, save in dollars, you're going to lose. It's as simple as that. You know, we can see that Congress is going to spend money. Even the Doge cuts, the $150 billion, you know, was reallocated to defense spending. So we're not going to stop spending money. And I think if you are looking for a safe place to store your money, you know, dollars are the last choice. Obviously, Bitcoin's the only place where you can hold your value. But if you think a politician is going to, you know, change or not get things done for their state and their constituents, it's too powerful. You're not going to stop the U.S. dollar. There's no way that they're going to willingly give up control when they can go back every 2 or 4 or 6 years and say, here's what I've done for you. That's the game. That's the grift. The dollar has been the perfect vehicle for a politician to make themselves look important and look powerful and look like they're doing things. But, you know, as we know, they're just continually debasing the currency. So I think Elon did a great job. You know, I give him a lot of credit for raising the issue, but the debt is so large, it doesn't even feel real anymore.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And the interesting thing for me, like where I have a hard time with Elon and Doge is they targeted like basically wiping out the $2 trillion deficit. And so it's like, how are you going to do? Like, look at the line items in the budget. And what exactly did you think that you were going to cut that would add up to $2 trillion? Because all of the things we actually need to cut, DOD, they've increased, yeah, they've reallocated, and we're up to a $1 trillion defense budget. And then you've got all the entitlement programs, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. I think I was a bit surprised that $150 billion, I think, is what I've heard as well. Somewhere in that range is what I've heard. I was surprised that it was that little, because it seems like there's still beyond, you know, the trillion, you know, a couple trillion of the untouchable, politically untouchable line items. It seems like there's still a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse that you could, you know, pull out. And $150 billion feels like a drop in the bucket. Nothing stops this train. I couldn't agree more with Lynn. Tony, what's your take here?
Well, you can almost argue that like Elon was set up for failure when it comes to Doge, right? Because there is no chance in hell he was ever going to succeed at it. And it just, you know, highlights how entrenched the rot is in that system. The spending, the money printing, you know, you can think about it as the oxygen to that entire corruption. If you turn it off, you know, you kill it. But if you try to do that, they will probably get to you first, right? So it becomes like a no-win zone. And because the debt has become so large now, well, to sustain it, you have to, you know, increasingly go bigger and bigger and bigger. So basically, the nothing stop that train means that American citizens, or just everybody that's dependent on the US dollar right now, is going to get financially annihilated because your purchasing power is going to drop drastically. And the more they do this to remain alive, the quicker you're going to head to zero. And that's where, you know, the calamity starts. So how do you get rid of this system? You can't. You have to replace it. So you can't go to war with them, but you can opt out. And as long as, you know, people somehow think they have to rig the system or make more of that garbage to remain relevant in it, you're just delaying the inevitable and making your life harder than it should be. So opt out, sound money, no one can control, learn a few steps. It's not that hard. And just, you know, exit. It couldn't be more simple than that. But yet, it seems like a workout from hell for so many folks.
Yeah, the other thing that's come to my attention recently on this is, first of all, the number of people that are employed by the federal government, right? And like, you would have a massive influx of people trying to collect unemployment even if you were able to touch that incredibly large group of people and the unproductive work that they're doing. But also, the federal government is so big and bloated that their spending into the economy is vital. So not to sound empathetic to the state, but like, you're really stuck between a rock and a hard place here trying to make any of these changes. And Tony, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, the best option is to opt out and to just remove yourself in any way that you can from the existing system. And financially, what that means is Bitcoin. We're going to talk about gold here in a couple of stories, sort of a funny proposal if you understand Bitcoin. Let's jump into the next bit of news, though. So, Tony, this is a video you posted that I think people need to see.
Give me your keys, and I will make you rich beyond your wildest dreams. No risk, no stress. Just trust me. I'll keep them safe.
They wrap it in ETFs, bank custody, and yield. And you eat it up like obedient sheep. But what they really want is control. Comfort is the cage. Convenience is the poison. You weren't supposed to hand Bitcoin back to the parasites it was designed to kill. Hold your keys or be owned.
Alrighty. So the point is self-custody. If you are trusting your keys to somebody else, you are taking on counterparty risk. And that those risks tend to, I think, be magnified beyond what most people conceive of. There's the obvious failure of businesses, but there's also government 6102 attack, regulatory concerns, you know, all of these sorts of things. Tony, why don't you sort of give your thoughts on the video and what prompted you to post it?
Well, the motivation behind the video was to illustrate what I'm seeing more of, which is complete lunacy and complacency, you know, amongst even Bitcoiners that are, you know, attracted by the illusion of wealth that is, you know, all these garbage traps wrapped up in these glistening numbers of, you know, number go up, get rich and what have you. And people are giving up the actual asset that they have in their possession in order to get to that generational wealth that no legacy system can ever provide or even come remotely close to matching. So an ETF will no way give you the amount of return than holding a scarce asset in your possession will ever do. Neither will a Bitcoin treasury. Neither will some imaginary yield denominated in that worthless paper. But yet, the path of convenience almost seems to be hypnotizing a lot of folks back into that stupid world, only for it to blow up in their face at some point in time. So that was what the message was supposed to sort of hopefully wake up, is that you're not supposed to give back the Bitcoin that was created to set you free to the same parasites that it was created to obliterate. Like, how stupid do you have to be to do this, right? But yet there are a lot of certifiably stupid people that make these decisions every single day. And I call them stupid because there's no other way to describe it, knowing that you have the option and the information to educate yourself as to why this is a stupid decision, but you still do it because you think you're better or smarter than everybody else.
Yeah.
And I have bad news for these people. At some point, this is going to blow up in your face, and no one is going to be upset that it blew up in your face because you asked for it. You put yourself in that position. You gave away what was once yours, and now you suffer the consequences of that moronic decision.
Yeah, I think that, Grew, why don't you take it? I'll give my thoughts after you kind of round that out.
Yeah, I would say people are trying to manage risk. They're fearful. They're afraid that Bitcoin's volatile. They don't know how to hold their own keys. They don't know how to use the network. And so they rely on a trusted third party. That's the antithesis of Bitcoin. You don't need to trust anyone at all. You can hold your own keys, verify your own savings on Bitcoin, verify your transactions, and you don't have to ask anyone for permission. I think when we see more people understand that, hopefully we do, we'll see more regular folks, the average person, start to trust Bitcoin. And there are some tools that help them do that very easily. But I think it's the person who's been in the system too long. They like Bitcoin. They like other coins. They like, you know, shit coins and cryptocurrency. And they don't have enough knowledge. They don't understand why it's so important. Or there's this thought that, you know, what happened to the Canadian truckers won't happen to me. Or what happened to anyone who was debanked? That won't be me. I'm just a small person. But that's what Bitcoin is designed for. It's designed for peer-to-peer electronic cash. Because it's outside the system, you no longer have to play by the rules. You don't have to wait for a bank transfer for 7 or 10 days. You don't have to worry about the Patriot Act when you are sending $10,000 worth of Bitcoin to one address or another. And until people experience what it's like to send and receive transactions and hold their own keys, we're going to keep running into this problem. You know, the BTC treasury companies, to me, this is not for the regular person. These are for the insiders to accumulate whatever dollars people are willing to send them because they lack knowledge, because they have too much fear, because they're risk averse. The interesting aspect of Bitcoin is that it's the antithesis of risk. It is risk-free if you know how to use it, if you can remember 12 words or write them down or stamp them securely. You know, it's the least risky option for saving your money. And if you look over a 4-year chart or even a 1-year chart, it significantly increases your value. I think right now is the perfect time for anyone who has $50 every week that they're not going to spend to start allocating it to Bitcoin, learning how to use a wallet, you know, learn how to run a node. And to me, it's just an absolute no-brainer. You know, they might have missed out on the early days of Bitcoin because they're looking at someone else, but fast forward 10 years and we are still incredibly early. You don't have to look at someone who has 10,000 Bitcoin and wish that was you. You know, you can try to get a fraction of a Bitcoin. And I think in 10 years, you'll be so glad that you dollar cost averaged. You didn't have to deal with the volatility and you slowly but surely acquired generational wealth. I mean, that is the future. It's probably, unfortunately, coming faster than we want it to. So there is urgency.
Yeah. What's really frustrating for me about these treasury companies is not that I think any productive corporation who wants to buy Bitcoin should do so. Like, I think that's a smart move. If I had really, like, the Bitcoin Way is sort of a Bitcoin treasury company, but we actually operate on a Bitcoin standard too, and we keep reserves in Bitcoin, but we're not issuing debt and telling other people to buy our stock and taking outside investment. Like, we're not doing any of the fiat games around that. A lot of these people, I followed their content for a long enough time to know that they understand Bitcoin. And to me, it's an incredible disservice to understand Bitcoin and for your top priority to be shilling your debt instruments or your stock or whatever other tools you want to provide access to versus telling people you need to build your Bitcoin treasury. Once you build your Bitcoin treasury, you take it into self-custody, you're running a node, you're a financially sovereign individual. If you want to go speculate, if you have a retirement account, knock yourself out, have fun. But it's not for the everyday person who hasn't gotten to 0.1 Bitcoin or hasn't gotten to a full Bitcoin or whatever your stacking goal is. It's for people who either know that they're speculating in a fiat instrument, are willing to take on lots of counterparty risk, all of the risks I mentioned and many, many more that we don't have time to cover. Or if you're Wall Street and, you know, stacking Bitcoin and like taking into self-custody is a whole different animal and you just want fiat price exposure or whatever, and you understand all of these things, you're used to counterparty risk, all of this. Yeah, okay, fine. Like, you know, have fun, do your thing. But to me, it's just such an incredible disservice to the average pleb who's, especially those coming in early. And Greer, I was on a podcast yesterday. I was explaining this. I sort of equate it to, like, if you went to the Bitcoin conference in Las Vegas, all of these booths that have nothing to do with Bitcoin. If this is your first Bitcoin conference or event and you walk around and talk to them, they say, hey, you can stake your Bitcoin and earn yield in another cryptocurrency. And they think, oh, well, I guess that's something Bitcoiners do because they're here at the Bitcoin conference. Okay, that sounds interesting. It's like, no, it's bullshit. It's not interesting. It's horrible. Stay away from that. I think these treasury companies, to me, for the average person trying to figure this stuff out who haven't read all the books and listened to all the podcasts and dug in deep, they're going to get stuck in these traps. So it's, I mean, to me, to some degree, the way it's marketed, it becomes like an ethical issue. And I don't think the operation of these companies is an ethical issue. You know, they have every right to do that. It's a free market. It's a private contract between investors and them. Go for it. But be very cautious about what these people think that they're buying, because most people don't understand. I don't know if either of you have a comment on that.
Yeah, of course. It's intended to separate unknowing people from their Bitcoin. Plain and simple. As far as I'm concerned, there's no other explanation for this. They know most people understand very little. And so they are trying to integrate Bitcoin into a world that they control. This is why I called it previously, like, if I was a corrupt government or institution, how would I attack Bitcoin? I'd fully embrace it, but I'd wrap it in all these bullshit ETFs and Bitcoin treasuries and those get-rich-quick schemes, because I know that most people coming in are going to, you know, be dazzled by everything I have to offer because it's things that they're familiar with. And like obedient sheep are going to come in and give me everything they own for the illusion of getting rich. And when it blows up in their face and they realize that they've lost everything, well, now it's too late because I've separated them successfully from the one asset that they could have held on to by themselves by learning 5 or 6 new steps. So yes, it's very hypocritical, but I think it's maliciously intentional that all of these are out there. Again, you cannot stop anyone from using Bitcoin. It's available for everyone. But it's on to the individuals to also do their part and understand that Bitcoin exists outside the system. It can never coexist with the legacy world. You have to forget it. You have to kill that mindset. Either you go right on a Bitcoin standard completely, or you've done nothing useful financially and, you know, for your life in general. At least this is my understanding and my mindset and the message I push with regards to Bitcoin, because it was created for peer-to-peer electronic cash, not depend on a third party in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
Great. Did you have something you wanted to add to that?
Yeah. I think I've heard so many times, even at the Bitcoin conference, someone saying, I'm going to invest in X so I can rotate the gains into Bitcoin. You know, I'm holding MicroStrategy or I'm holding something else so that I can sell it when it goes up and then I can buy Bitcoin with it. And that reminds me of, you know, the 2021 NFT crypto run that was, you know, ridiculous. And so many people got burnt. Maybe a couple people win at that game, but just like the lottery, the chances are you're not going to. The game we're playing is how much Bitcoin can you get while it's still available? It's not how many MicroStrategy shares, how much is Metaplanet going to go up? Like, all credit to the companies that are acquiring Bitcoin. And I agree with you. I think, you know, everyone should be getting as much Bitcoin as possible. But unless, I mean, even the millionaires, you know, how many millionaires don't have one Bitcoin? Like, that is the goal. There are probably more people that have $25 million than have one Bitcoin. You know, so I think it's very easy to get distracted. And like I said earlier, like, we get distracted by our fear of missing out. We see people who got in early and we want to try to catch up to them. But if you're going to be a Bitcoiner, you have to stop looking at everyone else. You have to start working on your own stack, figuring out how to provide value enough so that whatever life expenses you have, the remainder can go into Bitcoin. And then you do that gradually over time. You know, I've been in Bitcoin 4 years, a little over 4 years, and that has been my entire approach. Yes, I was, you know, I panicked at the very beginning when I first got into it. But over time, as I learned about it, I discovered and really understood that slow and steady wins the race. Ignore the noise, buy Bitcoin whenever you have money that you can use, and forget about what anybody else has. On one hand, you don't really know. And two, it doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is, what's your stack? Is it in self-custody? Can you verify it? Other than that, it's a distraction.
Yeah, I think the distraction ultimately is number go up. It is, Tony, to your point, the fiat mindset that I need to have more, but they're chasing the wrong units in the hopes that maybe they could convert it into Bitcoin. This is one of the things that frustrates me. People talk about, you know, he who accumulates the most Bitcoin wins. And for me, it's like, well, it depends on what game you're playing. Like, yeah, if you are trying to keep up with the Joneses and beat their, you know, stack more than them, then yeah, okay, that seems like a stupid game though. Like, I think the goal is, how much of your wealth can you preserve without counterparty risk? Do you have a peaceful life? Do you have, like, all of these other important things? And people are chasing these fiat gains in the hopes that maybe they can convert it to Bitcoin, never mind the counterparty risk, but also, like, the capital gains taxes. Okay, so you win and then you take a 20% haircut or whatever it is, and now that 70% gain when Bitcoin only did 50% CAGR, you know, you just broke even with Bitcoin, and you could have just taken it into self-custody, ignored all of the other risks and all the noise. So yeah, to me, big disservice. But I think a lot of people are going to get wrecked. And I agree with you, Greer. A lot of people, a smaller number, but still many, are going to become fabulously wealthy in fiat terms and have the opportunity to convert it to Bitcoin, and good for you. But you drug a lot of people through the mud in order to get there. So that's my take. Alrighty. So guys, we've got another story. Greer, we talk about this a lot, but gold. So kind of surprised. Zero Hedge, who I've seen write about Bitcoin, seems to have some sort of an understanding, but this was via shiftgold.com, of course. Why gold-based international trade is a no-brainer. And basically, if you go into the article, I kind of made some notes here, but they talk about the importance, the strategic advantage, protecting against currency devaluation and inflation. You know, the U.S. could use gold to circumvent sanctions, support trade deploy. And it's like, okay, but you got to do it with IOUs, or you got to ship it across the ocean to settle anything. Like, that's Bitcoin. Like, it is digital gold, but it's also so much more. Why can't people just wake up to this? Obviously, you know, Peter Schiff seems a little slow for a guy who has so many things figured out. Tony, why don't you take this one first? Why would gold not work?
We should have rebranded the title. It's a no-brainer why gold will never be the global standard. I mean, it's, if you have a little bit of common sense and you're up to what's going on in the world today, it's very easy to see that that's never going to happen. So many people are still stuck up on gold because of its time history. And okay, yeah, it's fine, you know, but, you know, we're not going back in time. We're moving forward. Like, no one's going back to the horse and cart or the fax machine. We live in the tech and digital age. We're moving forward. Gold, highly manipulated, extremely hard to move. If they decide, let's say by some fluke miracle, they do decide to make that the global standard, the next day, you'll have half the planet dug up, and all of a sudden, the supply of gold will be exponentially larger than what it is now. So it's never going to happen. That's one. The other thing is that what government is going to accept having a standard on something that they know someone else can have an advantage over them with, now that they know an option exists where that is impossible? So that too is unlikely to happen because none of these guys trust each other. So the only standard that they're going to willingly adopt is one that is neutral across the board, right? And that is Bitcoin. So you've got 5,000 years of history in gold. Yeah, okay, people are stuck up on that. Some of them are too old. They don't want to learn. Fine. But it doesn't change the fact that it's not the way forward and that Bitcoin completely obliterates the gold narrative now that it exists. And as more people learn about it, you know, it's just going to keep going in that direction. We are not going backwards.
Yeah. Imagine in a digital global economy thinking that you have to have something physical to settle everything when we're already using bank wires and, you know, digital money in the form of dollars to do most trade anyway. Greer, what's your thought?
I think the people pushing gold, I get it. They were like the original sort of Bitcoiners, separate money from the state. We had a better standard in the past. I think those people, they have a lot of gold and they have heavy bags. And so their interest is seeing gold succeed. You don't see young people care about gold. You don't see anyone under 50, in my opinion, care about gold. The guys who are the gold guys have been in it since, you know, the 80s and 90s or even earlier, because they had a memory of what the gold standard was like. And so they're not wrong, but they're wrong today. You know, they have the right idea, but the wrong solution. You know, you could make an advocate for the newspaper, but, you know, the internet has obliterated communication in the way that people used to consume it. So I think ignoring technology and the improvements and the fact that Bitcoin is trustless, borderless, completely unstoppable, it is, you know, distributed throughout the world. It's never going away. And likely there will never be a better replacement because of the fixed supply. Like, gold is going to be, you know, discovered, you know, every single year. And if we give people, as Tony said, if you give people the incentive that now gold's the reserve currency of the world, everyone with a shovel is going to be looking for it. So I don't see, other than they have heavy bags, the rationale. There is none. They do want something neutral, but Bitcoin is neutral money. This is the answer. And I think the other thing that's interesting is that, you know, no one controls the Bitcoin network. You know, if we participate, you win. And it doesn't take a lot of participation to start receiving the benefits of Bitcoin.
Yeah. And the centralizing nature of gold too, I think, is one that people miss. Is at the end of the day, it's, you know, one thing to keep a few gold coins in your house or something. It's a whole different matter to have to secure lots and lots of it. It's very heavy, very expensive to transport and insure. And so it ends up at banks or at Fort Knox or these sorts of places. And so the only economically viable option become IOUs. And like, that's why the scalability of the dollar across space is the reason we departed from exchanging in coins, because suddenly people are trying to trade and barter, you know, across seas. So hopefully these gold bugs can swallow their pride. They've been right for a long time. They were wrong starting in 2009. And I hope they wake up. Alrighty, last one. So this is more just a fun one, guys. So let's watch this video of Peter Thiel tripping over himself.
This is my very specific question for you, right? Is that,
well,
you're an investor in AI. You're deeply invested in Palantir, in military technology, in technologies of surveillance, in technologies of warfare, and so on, right? And it just seems to me that when you tell me a story about the Antichrist coming to power and using the fear of technological change to sort of impose order on the world, I feel like that Antichrist would be maybe be using the tools that you were building, right? Like, wouldn't the Antichrist be like, great, you know, we're not going to have any more technological progress, but I really like what Palantir has done so far, right?
Yeah,
I mean, isn't that a concern? Wouldn't that be the, you know, the irony of history would be that the man publicly worrying about the Antichrist accidentally hastens his or her arrival?
There are all these different scenario. I obviously don't think that that's what I'm doing. I don't think that's
what you're doing either. I'm just interested in how you get to world willing to submit to permanent authoritarian rule.
Well, but again, there are these different gradations of this we can describe, but is this so preposterous, what I've just told you, as a broad account of the stagnation, that the entire world has submitted for 50 years to peace and safetyism? This is a 1 Thessalonians 5:3. The slogan of the Antichrist is peace and safety, and we've submitted.
All righty. So Peter Thiel. So I think it was Peter Thiel. I saw on a clip of him from Joe Rogan, just like tripping over his words, like for like 30 seconds. Can't remember what the question even was. He seems to get stumped very easily in interviews when you start to poke at the things he's doing. And this is an interesting point. I think probably our opinions of Palantir are all similar. I'll let you guys weigh in that it's an evil surveillance state, you know, quasi-private company. But this guy now is having to contend with the question as to whether or not he might be the Antichrist, which is both sad, tragic, what's your Greer? What are your thoughts on Palantir? And if you want to weigh in on the spiritual aspect of whether or not Peter Thiel might be the Antichrist, feel free.
Yeah, no, I think I'm 99% sure the clip you mentioned with Joe Rogan was when Joe asked him if he still had Bitcoin, and he didn't want to admit that he had sold a bunch of it and should have kept it. I think that was the net result, because I remember seeing that clip also. I think there's an argument to be made that he's creating the Antichrist technology. You know, if you've read Revelation, I think you can see that you're not going to be able to buy or sell or trade without a mark on your forehead or your hand. So I think that's, you know, that already exists today. It just hasn't been enforced. It's interesting having that sort of idea be put in the mainstream, or, you know, what you call like the mainstream, you know, being on social. My thought is that we still have some time before that occurs, but probably not a lot of time. The other thing is, you know, if something like that were to emerge in the future, I still wonder how Bitcoin is not a way to get around it. You know, you cannot stop Bitcoin. So there's nothing to prevent someone, you know, from sending a transaction to someone else, whether you're buying food or water or shelter or clothing. So I think it's definitely an interesting clip, because I think we all saw them. He hadn't considered it, and you could kind of see him work through, you know, am I the bad guy? And, you know, maybe he hadn't realized that he's equipping a future bad guy.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's a scary thing. I think what scares me most about this sort of technology, to your point, is that a lot of it already exists. Much of it has probably been deployed in the background, kind of like we found out about the NSA spying and that from Edward Snowden. But how we discovered during COVID how easy it is to generate fear in the masses. And we found post 9/11. I mean, you can go through these like historic events that suddenly everyone, all the sheep come out and sort of, you know, corral around whatever leader or whatever, you know, alleged solution there is. And there are a lot of people who will concede that, okay, if this sort of spy and surveillance program is what we need to take on the Iranian sleeper cells in the United States that may or may not exist, or whatever the fear is, I'm just making that up, you know, very hypothetically, of course. this sort of technology seems ready to go and cause a lot of people who don't have Bitcoin in self-custody in particular a lot of problems. Tony, you are a cybersecurity man. What's your take on Peter Thiel, Palantir, the Antichrist?
It was nice how it blew up in his face, you know, pretty quickly too. But you guys bring up a good point. These tools have always been there. It's just that we weren't aware of them until, you know, something, you know, once in a while comes around an idea whose time has come that, you know, opens up Pandora's box. And now everybody's aware of a lot of things that were quote-unquote hidden previously. So now we know about all these tools and what they're really designed for and who the people behind them are and what evil amongst us really looks like. And so we all have an option now to opt out because we were given that option. Prior to 2008, you could argue, all right, well, you're stuck. But now you're no longer stuck. So that excuse is no longer valid in my book. The problem is too many people remain distracted and completely oblivious to all of these conversations that we're having here, which is why when you walk into the street and talk to like a normie, they look at you like you landed from space or you're on drugs, right? Because they're like, what are you, crazy? They have no clue what you're trying to tell them. Until, you know, something bad enough happens in their life and then they start complaining about it and wanting to vote left, right, up, down, thinking they're going to fix that problem. How we fix this, I don't know, man. It's like it seems like an impossibility, but I'm proven wrong because every day more people discover Bitcoin and, you know, that beacon of truth. And the answer is so easy now. You opt out, like you exit, you step out of the cage into this new world that no living soul can manipulate or control. And the only prerequisite is learning 5 or 6 new steps. That's it. Maybe because it's that easy that people don't believe it's something, you know, real. But enough people are doing it and so many lives are changing, you know, for the good, that I think the contagion effect it's just a matter of time before we get to that escape velocity. I don't think we'll ever get to 100%. There's too many people that are just, you know, beyond saving. But the good news is that we don't need that 100%. We need like a good, I'd say estimate anywhere between 8 to 10% of people doing what we do, like living the Bitcoin lifestyle. And then the rest will follow because it'll be so glaringly obvious that this is the right choice that people will just do anything to jump over that fence and come to our side.
Yeah, it strikes me as we talk about this, a lot of these concepts that we're talking about, like the importance of having permissionless money, it's one of those things that, you know, I think we take for granted because there are so many people who would hear this and like that, they might hear it and say, okay, I can see why that might be advantageous, but like the significance of that option hasn't really clicked. And so I think my hope is that as people listen to these sorts of conversations, other podcasts, read books, look at history, look at Greer, the Canadian truckers protest, right? Like these real world examples of why that's so important. Listen to Alex Gladstein talk about how in, you know, other countries, you know, far from here, like that's the option because otherwise you're censored and otherwise you're killed because they can trace everything that you're doing within the legacy system. So I hope more and more people wake up to the things that we sort of talk about flippantly because it's just second nature. We've just done the research and the reading and everything. But I understand it takes time. So I'd encourage anyone listening, all these things that we're discussing, just begin to internalize it. Go do the research, dig deeper. If it all doesn't make sense, be patient with yourself, but don't stop because if you stop with just a cursory understanding of Bitcoin's outside of the legacy system, it's especially if you're in the privileged West financially, you're probably not going to make it across the finish line to financial self-sovereignty and the ability to live and operate freely in a world where you're under surveillance from guys like Peter Thiel and just about everyone else who has lots of money and power. Any other comments on that, guys, or are we good?
Well, no, nothing much to add, but for me, it's very clear. If you want to make America great again, you're not going to wait for the government to do it because they are designed to not make America great again. The only people that can do that is the American people. And the quickest way for you guys to accelerate this is to stop using the product that destroyed America in the first place. You opt out of the dollar. things are more expensive. You don't need more dollars because things are more expensive. You need to let go of that dollar entirely and adopt a money that the dollar can no longer corrupt or be weaponized and used against folks, you know, that are not in such positions. That's how America becomes great again. You lead by example, not by brute force and bullying and concocting all sorts of problems all over the place. So, American people, man, the responsibility is on you. And I hope enough of you, you know, stand up and do the right thing.
We're doing our best. Greer, thanks for joining, man. Why don't you give people a handoff where they can find you? You got an awesome hat on. Tell people about Bird Flip.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for inviting me. I enjoyed it. Yeah. Bird Flip is my handle on X. And yeah, I sell low OPSEC Bitcoin goods at shopbirdflip.com.
Very cool. Well, thanks for joining, gents. Appreciate you both. For everyone listening, stick around for another minute, learn a little bit more about the Bitcoin way. I'll just make one point on this Palantir thing. One of the important things besides Bitcoin and self-custody you can do is securing your devices. We do a lot of that work as well. So listen up, visit thebitcoinway.com/podcast. I think you'll be glad you did. And gents, until next time, it's been a pleasure chatting.
Thanks, guys.
Me too.
Cheers. Hey there, thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge. While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and Big Brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want a backup in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.